This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In today's program, you can hear our feature, Justice and Peace. First, however, our bulletin of church news, followed by Africa News Panorama. We shall close today's program with Sports Roundup. I am Festus Tarawali. The June meeting of the Council of Cardinals continued on Tuesday at the Casa Santa Marta residence in the Vatican in the presence of Pope Francis. The Council, also known as the C9, was established by the Pope in 2013 to assist him in the work of reforming the Roman Curia and in the governance of the Church. This week's gathering is the third time the Council has met in 2024. The most recent session in April focused on the implementation of the Apostolic Constitution Praedicate Evangelium in diocesan curias and on the areas of conflicts throughout the world, particularly in the Middle East and Ukraine, with Pope Francis and the cardinals expressing the hope that efforts aimed at identifying paths of negotiation and peace might be increased. In other recent meetings, council members had discussed the role of women in the church and listened to the reflections of two women, Sister Regina da Costa Pedro and Professor Stella Mora. In a post on X, formerly Twitter, on Tuesday, ending with the hashtag #NoToHate, Pope Francis said, "We do not weave the fabric of human history by lumping together unverified information, repeating banal and falsely persuasive speeches, and shocking others with declarations of hatred. These actions," said the Pope, "strip people of their dignity." The Catholic Bishop of El Obeid in Sudan, Bishop Tombe Trile Yunan, has appealed to the warring parties in the country to end the 13-month-old conflict and for those in charge to listen to the voice of God and the voice of the people. Some 10 million Sudanese have been displaced since the conflict between the National Army and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces erupted in mid-April last year. Thaddeus Jones has this report.
The local Catholic Church leader of El Obeid, Bishop Tombe Trile Yunan, has decried the human toll the conflict situation in Sudan has inflicted as new clashes break out in different parts of the massive country. The war broke out just more than a year ago in mid-April 2023, involving the leaders of two warring parties, one involving the government's armed forces and the other a militia known as the Rapid Support Forces. The fighting and violence has led to the destruction of public and private facilities, resulting in widespread hunger, lack of access to medical care and supplies of essential goods, including water. The destruction has also greatly limited online communication. In an interview with the Church's missionary news agency, Fides, Bishop Tombe Trile of El Obeid recently called on the two warring parties to kneel and pray to end the conflict. He says he's called on those in charge to kneel in prayer and to listen to the voice of God and the voice of the people, children and women who are crying out for peace, and also to the blood that's flowing from their country of absolutely innocent people who've died in the crossfire. Bishop Trile sadly acknowledges that it seems nobody is listening to anyone, and the leaders continue to fight and kill, convinced that they have the upper hand, and nobody is willing to step back, above all to seek dialogue, he says, and he worries over the reality that the leaders are still not ready to meet, but looking to defeat one another through armed conflict. He said, in such a context, it's difficult to carry out daily activities related to the church and its pastoral work, and that moving from one place to another can be quite dangerous. At the same time, he continues his mission and said he just returned from South Sudan, from the border area, for the ordination of a deacon. And he said, "We always ask the members of our communities to console one another, to persevere in prayers, in mission, and in the administration of the sacraments, even if some parishes are without services because they've been evacuated." And he praised the catechists in particular for keeping communities together in these very difficult times. Thaddeus Jones.
In an interview with Vatican News, the spokesperson of the International Committee of the Red Cross in Sudan, called for more access to humanitarian aid in the African nation. We call on the international community to remember the millions of Sudanese people who tragically on a daily basis struggle to meet their basic needs, said Adnan Hezam in the interview with Deborah Castellano-Lubov. He expressed his concern that Sudan, along with Yemen and Syria, tend to be more and more forgotten as the wars in the Holy Land and Ukraine take the world's attention. And now to Nigeria, where as the debate over the minimum wage continues to generate reactions across the country, the executive director of Lux Terra Leadership Foundation in Abuja, Father George Eusani, has added his voice to the debate, criticizing the huge gap between rich and poor in Africa's most populous nation. The Nigeria Labour Union and other workers' unions are advocating an increase in the national minimum wage from 30,000 naira, the equivalent of $21, to 250,000 or $167 per month due to the rising cost of living. However, the government's offer of 62,000 naira per month or $41, which is double the current minimum wage, has yet to be accepted by the unions, leading to a stalemate in the negotiations. Following his viral video on the minimum wage debate, Father Eusani spoke to Catholic media practitioners on the issue. Let us listen to some of what he said about the wide economic margin between rich and poor in Nigeria, which he said is not sustainable.
Our country is so unequal that it is not sustainable. If such an unequal system will not sustain, something will give very soon. How can in one society somebody earns up to 30 million naira in 1 month? We were hearing it as news before, but it has been confirmed that there are indeed people in government that are earning up to 30 million naira in 1 month. And to have those same people preside over a discussion about whether government can pay 60,000 naira or not, it's something that made me very angry, and I'm still angry about. What kind of society are we on? A society of slave masters and slaves? You go to a place like Transcorp Nikon, and 1 meal, they can finish that 60,000, and yet they can be discussing whether the government can afford to pay a family man for a whole month. Some of them feed their guard dogs with more than that. Why should it be an issue? Now, if the government cannot afford 60,000 for the poor worker, how come the government is able to afford 21 billion to build a new residence for the vice president, 40 billion to refurbish the National Assembly, 100 billion to subsidize Hajj? Hajj is not compulsory for Muslims. It's for those who can afford it. And the world of today says anybody that earns less than $60 in 1 month, that person is living below poverty line. But what we are discussing in Nigeria, and our politicians are saying it is not sustainable to pay people that amount, is $38 in a month, meaning it is way below poverty line. Every one of us has the phone now. Every one of us can broadcast now. We no longer just depend on radio stations and TV stations. Therefore, if we are hearing the voices of more people speaking like this, then maybe the people who are in leadership positions will recognize that this is a very serious thing. Something serious is wrong with our leaders, that instead of being leaders, they are like conquerors who have conquered the people, who exploit the resources, harvest the resources to take care of themselves and their immediate families, and can't care anything about the people. That is what I am after. I'm saying this is evil. This is unacceptable. This is against all the principles of justice. This is against the principles of the social teachings of the church. And we must speak against it. We must talk about it. We must decry it. And pray that more people will join me in screaming about this so that the right thing will be done.
That was the executive director of Lux Terra Leadership Foundation in Abuja, Father George Eusani. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
Four people were killed after a vehicle tried to avoid the convoy carrying the body of the late Malawi Vice President Saulos Chilima hit mourners. 12 other people were injured in the incident on Sunday night and were being treated in hospital. The traffic accident happened on Sunday night when thousands of people had lined the streets in order to catch a glimpse of the coffin as it was being transported for burial. The accident followed clashes between local people, the police and soldiers escorting the late vice president's funeral convoy from the capital Lilongwe to his home village for burial. Chilima died in a plane crash a week ago and was buried on Monday in his home district of Ncheu, some 180 kilometers south of the capital, Lilongwe. Chilima is said to have had a special connection with people, especially the youth, and was considered a breath of fresh air in Malawian politics. His party formed a coalition government with that of President Chakwera after contesting and winning the 2020 elections as alliance partners. Some of Chilima's supporters have been critical of how the government handled events leading to his death and loudly booed the president when he delivered his eulogy at the funeral service on Sunday. Russian President Vladimir Putin on Monday congratulated South Africa's Cyril Ramaphosa on his re-election as president. Analysts say Putin's gesture reflects continued good relations with Pretoria, despite uncertainty over Moscow's more than two-year-old invasion of Ukraine. A statement on the Kremlin website said that Putin made a phone call to Ramaphosa in which hope was expressed for continued joint work on further strengthening of the partnership between Russia and South Africa in all its aspects. 26 children are among the Skisti people believed to be missing following two shipwrecks that have killed at least 11 people off the coast of southern Italy. German charity Rescue Ship said it picked up 51 people from a sinking wooden boat. Médecins Sans Frontières said one of the two separate accidents happened near the Italian island of Lampedusa on Monday. The United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, the International Organization for Migration, IOM, and United Nations Children's Agency, UNICEF, said in a joint statement that the boat had set off from Libya and was carrying migrants from Syria, Egypt, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. The other shipwreck was located about 125 miles off the coast of Calabria in southern Italy. The agency said the Mediterranean is the deadliest known migration route in the world. More than 23,500 migrants have died or gone missing in its waters since 2014. An armed group opposed to Niger's ruling junta on Sunday night attacked and disabled a section of the country's China-backed petrol pipeline. The Patriotic Liberation Front said its attack on the pipeline was aimed at pushing Niger's Chinese partners to cancel the export deal. You are tuned to the Daily Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
You are welcome to Justice and Peace. The Feast of the Uganda Martyrs is celebrated every year on June 3rd. According to the Uganda police, the pilgrims who came to the Catholic Uganda Martyrs Shrine at Namugongo this year to celebrate the feast were 4 million. Father Vincent Rubega, a member of the Missionaries of Africa, is director of the Uganda Martyrs Shrine. He has many responsibilities, including making preparations for the spiritual nourishment of the pilgrims, ensuring the security of the pilgrims, ensuring constant cleanliness of the site, and given the big numbers of the pilgrims, ensuring that there is constant monitoring of their movements so that there are no accidents and stampedes that could lead to loss of lives. Father Rubega is in Rome for a visit. We had the privilege to welcome him to our studios here in the Vatican. He told us that the Uganda Martyrs have become the identity of the faithful in Uganda and of the country at large.
Within the Catholic Church, and I would say Ugandans as such, the word Uganda Martyrs is sung everywhere, and people know these are heroic young men who offer their life for Christ. So it's known all over the country.
At the Uganda Martyrs Shrine, where you are erected at Namugongo, yes, there is a first-class relic, born of St. Charles Wanga, in a glass attached to the front of the mahogany wood altar. Now, define for us what a relic is and how significant it is in the Catholic Church.
Well, a relic, I would say, is a first-class remain of a saint. It may be a bone, it may be I would say, piece of cloth or something to which he or she was attached. The relic we have in Namugongo is a piece of the bone of Chazirwanga. It's not only the relic, also the grave of Chazirwanga. He was buried under the altar. You, all those who have been to Namugongo, you see a red light under the altar. And the relic, the piece of bone which is there at the altar, was exhumed from under there. And wherever there is a relic, people feel indeed a martyr is present. Though he has passed on, is in heaven, but part of him is there. So we cherish it and honor it, knowing that indeed the one we pray with, the one who has been exalted in heaven, is present. And when we are speaking and praying, we feel in a special way his presence. That is Chazirwanga.
To an ordinary Christian, what is the importance of a relic?
I think a relic for me and for the many people, it's a symbol which demystifies, I would say, what we are thinking about. You know, at times we talk of martyrs and you feel like they were sometime alive and it's not part of us. But once you see the relic, you feel that the experience has come home. So it makes you very close linked to the saint.
In the past month, the relics of the Uganda martyrs have been taken from parish to parish in Kampala Archdiocese. And at one time, I think they also brought it to your parish at Namugongo.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
Tell us the importance of carrying these relics around.
In the Archdiocese of Kampala, we made it a plan that the relics of the Uganda martyrs, Mathias, Mulumba, and Chazirwanga, visit all the parishes. And now I would say 80% of the parishes have received these relics. And in a way, we have brought back alive the story of the Uganda martyrs. And more than ever now, everybody knows the story of the Uganda martyrs, because wherever they go to a parish, we spend 3 or 4 days accompanying them and giving the true story. The news about the Uganda martyrs has to be renewed. And indeed, it has been renewed.
In this recent celebration of the Uganda Martyrs Day, were the relics brought at the shrine?
Yes, they were brought as it has been done every year. Every year before the Mass, we make a procession with the relics. And this time they were brought. And whenever the relics are brought in, they help us to focus. We are focusing on something which is real. A person or people who offer their life. And how do you know? Part of their remains are here. They were once one of us, and they are here. So wherever the relics appear, they help people to focus more and get more in touch with the Uganda martyrs. They feel they are part and partial of us. You know, we have many saints. Some we have never seen. Some we just only hear. For some, we just read. But these ones, we say, they were real. They were among us. They are present. And you feel you are even closer to talk and pray with them.
Many Catholics and even non-Catholics say they have received favors from the Uganda martyrs. Now, you, a man on the ground, what are some of these favors people have received?
I would say the Uganda martyrs did a work of miracles. I wouldn't say people are saying, I am also saying. You know, in most cases, many saints, we say they are working miracles because some souls sick and were healed. And it happened to Uganda martyrs at the beginning. Remember, when they were announced saints, it was because of the two miracles. The miracle of the healing of the sisters and the miracle of healing of a young man who would not walk.
And he's still alive.
And the man is still alive. And I've met him physically. But now there's a special element about Uganda martyrs. Many people give testimony. And testimony not because of deformities which were healed. They go a bit more to touch all the aspects of people's lives. People have come to me and given testimony when they are very angry with somebody and they could not talk. But after prayer, something came off their heart and they went back with a reconciled spirit. Some people have come to Namugongo confused. They don't know where to go. But after prayer at the grave of Chazirwanga in the Basilica, they come out smiling. So people, I would say, praying with the Uganda martyrs, because their way of working miracles, I would put it this way, has gone beyond the traditional way. It's just not only sickness, physical, but they have touched people's lives. I've seen people who say they were drunkard. There's one I know, he was indeed a drunkard. He said after praying And he left it drunk, but after 3 days, he said he felt he lost the taste of beer. Came back to Namgongo as a choir master, very sober. So what happened? He says he doesn't know, but he attributes it to prayer. So now the Uganda Martyrs have come to work on miracles which are very at home. And you know, the story of the Uganda Martyrs is also spreading more than you think. First of all, I would attribute it to the media. The media is focusing on the Uganda Martyrs, thanks to you also here at Vatican Radio. You have done a lot to promote it. Secondly, we have many prominent people who have come to Namgongo, prominent especially in the church. We have Pope Paul VI, he came first, John Paul II, and now Pope Francis. And they have come when the media has grown. But more so, there are many people within Uganda, they are not using any media, who have had first-hand experience of a miracle in their lives. I mean, not that they are sick or whatever, that what I've mentioned, they have had a change, a positive change in their life. And normally when you have such a change, you don't keep quiet. You tell your neighbor, neighbor to your neighbor, okay? So this one has also helped even more than the media to spread the news about the Uganda Martyrs. Even myself, if you ask me, I tell you I've had a first-hand experience, not of a miracle, but miracles in my life through the Uganda Martyrs. And I never keep quiet talking about them. So now the propagators of the news are the local people because of the experience they have had in their life.
In October this year, we are marking 60 years since the Uganda Martyrs were canonized by Pope Paul VI.
Yes, please.
Now, are there special arrangements for celebrating the canonization day?
The climax of the celebration is going to be at Uganda Martyrs Catholic Shrine, Munyonyo. We are picking Munyonyo because that's the place where the whole story began. The judgment and the decision of the king to kill the Uganda Martyrs was taken at Munyonyo in his palace. So the church has chosen to revisit this, historical place and have the celebration there. Of course, in Namgongo, we always have celebrations and the shrine is always open for pilgrims. But this time, with the guidance of the Archbishop, the celebrations are going to be at Munyonyo, where the whole story began.
Our thanks there to Father Vincent Rubega, a member of the Missionaries of Africa and rector of the Uganda Martyrs Shrine at Namugongo in Uganda. And that was Justice and Peace for this week. This has been Johnny Baptist Tumusime.
This is a sports roundup and welcome to the program. My name is Kenyatta Godfrey Kampamba. Namibia has been placed in Group C alongside Angola, Lesotho and Seychelles for the upcoming Council of Southern Africa Football Associations, COSAFA Cup. As was announced last week, the regional tournament is scheduled to take place in South Africa from 26th June to 7th July, showcasing the talents of 12 competing teams. During the pool stage, each team will compete against the others, with semifinals set for 5th July. The final and third place playoff will follow on 7th July. COSAFA has emphasized in a statement that the tournament's format is designed to ensure each participating country plays a minimum of 3 and a maximum of 5 games throughout the competition. In addition to Namibia's Group C lineup, other groups and their respective contenders are Group A, where there is South Africa, Mozambique, Eswatini and Botswana, and Group A with Zambia, Comoros and Zimbabwe. The stage is set for an exciting clash of regional football prowess as teams prepare to compete for COSAFA Cup glory in South Africa. Kenya's double world record holder Faith Kipyegon at the weekend stormed to victory in the women's 5,000 meters at the national trials for the Paris Olympics in what was her first race of the year. The two-time Olympics and world 1,500 meters champion clocked 14 minutes for 6.28 seconds in first place, ahead of world record holder for the women's 10,000 meters, Beatrice Chebet, who timed 14 minutes 52.55 in second. The 2022 world 10,000 meters bronze medalist, Margaret Chelimo, clocked 14 minutes 59.39 seconds in third place. Kipyegon is also expected to compete in the women's 1,500 meters, for which she will be defending her title at this summer's race. The National Federation, in collaboration with the Ethiopian Olympic Committee, has now announced that while many athletes have achieved the qualifying times for the World Athletics Championships in recent years, not all these times meet the stringent criteria for major international competitions like the Olympics. To address this, they plan to leverage the athletes' world ranking points in order to secure participation in these prestigious events. World Athletics has engineered a database system in order to meticulously track and disseminate the outcome of competitions crucial for accruing world ranking points, such as the Olympics, within specified time frames. And in Nigeria, the Super Falcons, the women's national football team, have got a new world ranking. According to the latest FIFA Coca-Cola Women's World Rankings released on Friday, the Super Falcons are currently ranked 38 in the world and first in Africa. Spain is top, reigning supreme for another edition, but the pressure is mounting. France surges into second place, overtaking a sleeping England, who now sits at third. Other than the Macedonians, five other national teams hit their highest ever points totals, and these are Spain, Zambia, Puerto Rico, El Salvador, and Democratic Republic of Congo. And on that note, we come to the end of today's sports roundup. Until next week, at the same time, my name is Kanyan Tagodufri Kampamba.
You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio. In our next program at the same time tomorrow, you can hear our feature, Health and Healing. I am Festus Tarawali, and do join us then. Praise be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.